Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is the A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality we see beneath it all.
That's right. That's right. And we're on episode number 25, last show of season one, I guess you'd call it.
Perfect numbering.
Yeah, that's great.
Christmas is coming and the book
look at
is
that.
About Christmas. How serendipitous.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yes.
Well, good stuff.
Although I don't see a planned pattern here. We're safe on that.
That's right. All right, today we're going to talk about Hogfather by Terry Pratchett.
Yes.
And it is my first Terry Pratchett novel, although I've always wanted to read one. So thank you very, very much for putting this on the list. And that's one of the cool things about doing this podcast is... you know, some of the stuff that we've read this year, I had been planning to read. So it's fantastic to do it, in this setting. So it's great.
Yeah, it's fun to do it thinking about talking about it with someone specifically. And also, it's funny because I had not planned on reading the things that you brought up, but they were all things I was so glad I was exposed to. So it's kind of the other side of the coin of, wow, I never would have made myself read East of Eden.
Yeah.
Ever. It wasn't even on my radar. And now, when I was at my Catholic Women's Book Club earlier this week, another friend and I were talking about how can we spread out 600 pages because everybody's got to read this amazing book.
Oh,
so
that's neat.
Thank you to you for that.
Very cool.
Bringing those unexpected things on my highlight or on my horizon.
Well, that's great. So, yep. Yeah. Lots of fun. Lots of fun.
Definitely.
So cool. So, Discworld. I mean, there. You know, I guess I have to thank you for putting like 157 books on my to-read list here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this book was hilarious. And, I am going to go back and read some of these every now and then. Have you read a lot of these novels?
I have read certain, what would you say? He's got a lot of different characters that he'll focus on in one book. Like he's got a series about the witches and he's got a series about these watchmen that are in Ankh-Morpork, if that's how you say it.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really care for the Watchmen series. I love the witches. I love the ones with death, which is what the Hogfather features most. And I have always really enjoyed the Wizards of the Unseen University.
Okay.
I think it's called. And they also come together here.
All right, cool. I found it's a chart of Terry Pratchett novels and which ones are the best ones to start with. And, I mean, all these Discworld books are on this cool chart. And I'll put it on the post.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to see it. Well, yeah, because maybe I haven't tried the best of the Watchmen one for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
They do show up in one that features the opera.
Oh.
And I enjoyed them in that. Although... I would say the earliest ones aren't the best ones to start with. Rose went back and read a couple of those, the very first ones recently, and I read them and they were enjoyable, but they weren't, you know, him at his best. Mm. He was just finding his way into Discworld, so to speak.
Yeah, I saw a little interview of him when I was, thinking about the podcast, and he said it was on his 25th anniversary of Discworld.
Okay.
And he said that he started writing them kind of because he didn't use the word annoyed, but he felt like all the fantasy out there was Tolkien-esque, and he wanted to poke fun at them all. So he said, he said, then after a few novels, I discovered plot.
Hey, hey. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's what you're seeing, and maybe he was serious. You know, I felt like he was joking, but maybe he was, I've run out of... things to make fun of, in that way. So now I need actually a story to go with this. And maybe his early books were that way.
I think I agree with that because the first ones, I think it's like The Color of Magic and there's another one. One of them is like four long short stories that kind of got put together with two characters threading through them. And one of them is the first tourist. Nobody knows what to do with him. And he will do things like see bandits attack and go, oh, this is super. I've wanted to experience this. So he's making fun of types. And there is a loose plot, but not much. And that makes a lot of sense.
Hmm.
And even so, they were still pretty funny, but they were kind of like, have you ever read any of those books by, I think they're Piers Anthony is the name?
Yeah.
Where it's all puns. Long
time ago in high school, yeah.
Yeah, right. And that
Magic of Xanth series.
That's it. Yeah. That's kind of the time I read some of those. And I was amused by them at first because they were quite clever and funny. But after a while, you just go, okay, but nothing's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's thing after thing, and it's either predictable or easily solved, and there's not enough depth. And somehow Terry Pratchett just takes that and really elevates it, I think.
Oh. Yeah, Terry Pratchett, I mean, he's hilarious, for one thing.
It's
his British humor. But he's pointed, and it's satirical. And I did find that there's a depth to it. That I enjoyed. You know, I'm sure that there are a heck of a lot of things that I did not understand where they came from. But every now and then, as we get into it, he pokes fun at himself a little bit too. And, it's not vicious stuff. It's very fun.
No. And that's kind of what makes it, I don't want to say tolerable, but he does point out everybody's inconsistencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so because the book in large, although it's about Christmas, actually, the book in large, reading it for this, I was like, I didn't realize how many atheistic themes there really were here. But it's okay, because he's also making fun of the way atheists think. And by doing that, as I was saying to you just before we started, it's kind of almost like Saturday Night Live, where it doesn't matter which party has a president in power. There's always something to make fun of, and they're going to go for whatever there is there. So because it's even-handed, you don't care when they make fun of your guy, because you know they're going to point out the stuff about the other one.
Yeah.
And this
yeah.
is kind of that same way.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
Yeah. And I guess people could tell us. I mean, but I've read this book. This might be my third or fourth time to read it,
mm-hmm.
because he's just so clever, and because there's more to it.
Yeah,
you can just enjoy it on many levels.
All right, well let's talk about what the book's about, because a lot of the stuff that I have to say is going to be after we describe it. So,
right?
Yeah, we need to jump straight into the spoiler section.
I know. I'm trying to think how to describe it.
Well, at the beginning, it's a surprise. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, Discworld is basically, I think we mentioned this last time when we were talking about reading it, but his concept is that Discworld is actually a flat disk. Things fall off the edge into outer space, and it's carried by four elephants who are in the back of a giant turtle, and the turtle just goes walking through space.
Mm-hmm.
And scientists will eventually, every so often, try to explore this concept, but magic exists, and it's kind of like the only places you ever see are always kind of modeled on different places on our Earth.
Yeah.
But so when you start off, you've got this fantastic setting that's kind of mythological anyway, and shows that even though we've dismissed all this stuff as myth, it really exists here.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, you do have scientists, as well as wizards and all that kind of thing. And so,
and gods.
And gods, yeah. Small gods. You never see large gods.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have anthropomorphization. I can't believe I managed to say that word at this hour.
Hooray!
Yay! Of characters like Death. And Death is a major player in this. And Death in his... it's funny, in the early books, Death was much less humorous, but Death is extremely literal. He's fascinated by human beings.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as time has gone on, he has tried to acquire some of the characteristics, maybe, of mm-hmm. humans, or some of the habits. I mean, like when you go to his house, because he has a house, it's full of cats. He likes cats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they can get along with Death, because that's how cats are. So he'll take the kind of thing that, you go, oh, that would be a cat, right? Give him some cream. He doesn't care who's doing it. A bony figure with a scythe.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this book, instead of having Father Christmas, which I guess would be the British Santa Claus, classic Santa Claus,
mm-hmm.
you have the Hogfather. And you get told the myth early on, and instead of reindeer, he's got four hogs named Tusker and things that. And but he does go around on Hogs Watch Eve, you know, distributing presents down the chimney, and kids write him letters, and there are Christmas trees or Hogs Watch Night trees or whatever you call them. And they leave, you know, out sherry for him to drink and that kind of thing. So that's kind of the setting.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to take it from there?
Sure.
Good luck.
Yeah, and then the Hogfather, you know, it's interesting that Pratchett just named him the Hogfather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, everybody wants something at the, you know, at Hogs Watch Night. And that's, you know, I thought that was pretty smart.
Yes.
So as the book opens, you realize that something is horribly wrong. See, I'm trying to remember the very first scene in the book. Does it start off with those auditors?
It's at the Assassin's Guild, I thought.
Oh, yeah. So the Assassin's Guild. So somebody, this hooded figure visits this Assassin's Guild.
Right.
And requests the murder of the Hogfather.
Yeah, you don't know what they're trying to do until really, that might be a spoiler.
Oh, really? Okay.
It doesn't really matter. But they're like, they give him like a piece of paper or something and says, this is what we want eliminated. And they're like, that's impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they agree to take it on because there's so much money.
That's right. That's right. And it's hilarious.
yeah.
I just sit here and I chuckle. I'll try not to chuckle through the whole podcast, but.
Then you see, then actually what you do is you get a series of vignettes introducing different characters.
Yeah, yeah.
One of whom is Death's granddaughter.
Right, yeah. And I was going to talk about Tea Time.
Sorry. Oh, yeah.
This character, I'll go ahead and describe this scene because it's very early. But the head of this Assassin's Guild, after this hooded figure makes his request, puts a whole bunch of money in his vault, and he says, okay, you know, so the guy accepts the job. So then he calls in this character named Tea Time, or Tiatime, as he wants to be called.
Right.
And he talks to this character and says, well, this is what we want to do. We need to, you know, kill this guy. And, you know, I really have no idea how to do it. Do you have any ideas? And, of course, this Tea Time says, yeah, I've got an idea because I've been thinking about it. And it turns out that he spends his spare time, like on Hogs Watch Eve, instead of wishing for presents, he would think of ways to kill the Hogfather. And so he said, yeah, I have this plan.
Yeah,
and of course it's complicated because
twisted in a weird way.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And the plan, of course, is very complicated because the Hogfather is a small god. And so he can't be killed completely. What do they call him? Diminished. He can be diminished, right. But he can't be eliminated. So anyway, so his thread of the whole book is the execution of this plan.
Mm-hmm.
And execution is probably a good word for what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. It's brilliantly conceived and plotted.
Yes. Yes. And have you ever read any Neil Gaiman?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
This book reminded me, you know, I guess Gaiman would remind me of Pratchett, right? Because Pratchett, I think Pratchett was first. But they're kind of from the same mold.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. But Gaiman's got a much more dark note. But yeah, this is, to me, this resonates a lot with Neverwhere.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's no.
Please do make your point.
That is excellent. So, but yeah, there's these characters in Neverwhere. Have you ever seen the BBC version of Neverwhere?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's a mini series, and
good.
Yeah, it was good, but it's got that BBC quality to it. Have you seen Hogfather BBC?
No, somebody was asking me about that on Goodreads, and I was like, I didn't even know there was a version.
I just looked. I haven't seen it, but I put it on my Netflix queue, And okay. I did watch a couple of clips of it on YouTube, and it's also got that BBC quality to it.
Right. I know exactly what you mean. Okay. I start thinking of Doctor Who-ish yeah,
exactly,
sort of things,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, see, and I tend to avoid things. If I love the book, I tend to avoid the movies or TV shows mm-hmm. about them because it ruins what's in my head, or I just get mad at it.
Gotcha.
I'm kind of rigid.
Yeah, this ruined what's in my head a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But death is, you know, completely skeletal. And the clips right. that I watched on YouTube were very faithful to the book, that, as far as I could tell. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'll probably watch it. And but anyway, Neverwhere had these two characters named Croup and Vandemar. Had I missed a Vandemar? Croup and Vandemar. And they would run around chasing the main characters throughout the entire book.
Mm-hmm.
And this tea time reminded me a lot of those two guys.
Yes, you know. Extremely ruthless, thinks in a completely different way than anyone else, and can confound anyone because of it.
And
he's just single-minded.
And yet funny. And I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that quality is that, you know, these violent, you know, every now and then, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, every now and then tea time would just kill somebody because he was finished with him.
Yeah.
And yet it was, you know, you're thinking, oh, how horrific. But, I think it was probably the effect that it had on all the other people that were with him. Now they would, you know, they would be extremely nervous, of course, and didn't want to finish any of their jobs because they knew that when they were finished, they were done.
Well, and most of them, well, I would say some of the characters, of course, had just taken it on as a job, but, well, I guess they all had, but some of the characters, the main band through whose eyes Tea Time's characters are generally shown are horrible villains themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But yet their villainy is much diminished compared to Tea Time's. And by the end, even though they're awful, you're feeling so sorry for them. Because mm-hmm. basically what Pratchett is able to do, now that I think about it, is he shows us that human element that's in all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even though they're awful and the layers of murder and torture have been put on them, he strips them down to their basics to where you're like, oh no, not the wardrobe.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Pratchett does that is able to make that things like that funny is he takes either things that we all understand, like, you know, if you're under your blankets in the dark, the monsters can't get you.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that from being kids, right?
That's right.
And so he takes things like that, that we all, if we don't know that, we immediately understand what that person was afraid of as a kid in this particular twist of the story, and you go, oh no, not that.
Right.
So he's able to appeal to our basic humanity. It's almost like Stephen King in The Stand. All the things that he put into that, or not The Stand, The Shining, I'm sorry.
The Shining, okay.
All the things he put into The Haunted House.
One thing
would horrify one friend, and I was like, oh, I'm not afraid of the hedge maze, but I am afraid of that bathroom, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
Interesting.
Anyway, we're off the story,
I
guess.
No, that's okay. But. Yeah, so this thread, Mr. Tea Time, or Tiatime, and he keeps saying that, when he introduces himself, is I am Tiatime. Oh, and I should mention that I listened to the audiobook, which is by Isis Audio. Narrated by a guy named Nigel Planer, and it was awesome.
Oh,
absolutely
love
terrific.
To hear it.
All I can do, I can just hear Death's voice, and it was so good.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, well, sure. Well, I'll make sure you hear it.
Oh, thank you.
You betcha. So, it was absolutely terrific. Tiatime is in there. And yeah, every time he introduces himself, he's, you know, I am Tiatime. And everybody's like,
Like
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, and they're like,
hello?
No, didn't you hear me say Tiatime?
Tiatime, it's not tea
that
time.
That explains how you can say how he pronounced his name so well. I kept saying it to myself because he put the syllables in there. I was like, I don't know what he's saying.
Right.
So tea time.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's one thread.
And then the other thread, like you just mentioned, is Susan, who at the beginning of the book is a nanny for this family, and you can tell that something's going on with her because there's a monster in the basement. The kids can see it and she can see it, but there's a little party going on at the place and none of those people can see it. They think that she's, you know, she picks up a poker and she goes downstairs and says, hey, I'm about to go. I mean, the scene is just so funny. And then she goes downstairs and, you know, you hear all this stuff. And then she comes up, her poker's bent and everything. And one of the guests is like, hey, that's a good idea if, you know, you're showing that kid. That, yeah, it's all psychological. And you're showing this kid that you can fight the monster so that the kid will go to sleep, you know. And the kid's eyes are huge.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she's dragging the monster behind her.
When they're gone, she drags the monster out so the kids can see it. Well, and the thing I think is, I just thought of this when you're saying it, is although the adults are saying, oh, jolly good idea, show them that it's all in their heads and everything, mm-hmm. or, you know, act it out so they can get it out of their heads. And then they come up and they're like, wow, I don't know what she did to bend that poker. Wow, how realistic. And they're all kind of turning pale. And so what you can kind of see is underneath, they know it wasn't fake. Yeah,
that's
but
right.
On the surface, they're not going to let themselves admit it. And that's the thread of everything in the book.
Right. Yeah. It has a lot to say about belief.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that may be the main theme of it. Although,
yeah,
you know,
let ourselves
you can
believe.
Yeah. And you can take pluses and minuses from what he has to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, I didn't catch that right there, but you're right.
You know, that has something
to say about belief, that scene right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good writer. He's really terrific.
He really is. Well, and so Susan, because she's Death's granddaughter through a series of circumstances that aren't worth worrying about here.
From a previous book, I imagine.
Yeah, it is from a previous book, which I found to not be one of his best ones, but
which
I
one
always
is
liked,
that, do you know?
I don't remember.
I remember the.
It features his father or her parents a little bit more.
There's one called Mort.
Oh, that's her father.
Let's see.
You know what? Actually, the one with her in it actually was not a bad, or what I would call a bad one, or one that I did like it. But it's the one with Mort, which is introducing Death's apprentice, and that winds up being her father.
Okay.
And Death has an adopted daughter.
It says here the Death novels are Mort, Reaper Man, Soul Music, Hogfather, then Thief of Time.
Oh, Thief of Time, yeah. It seems to me like Soul Music was the one, but I could be completely wrong because I haven't read those in a long time.
Cool. Yeah, I think I'm going to read them all.
Like I said,
or listen to them all because, you know, if this guy narrates them all, I'm sure you're going to listen.
Oh, man. Well, I just love the ones with the witches. So maybe I'll put one of those on my
I should try that.
List
I should try that.
For next year. Because I was trying to think that there's one, and I think it's the second or third one with the witches, that is the first one of his books I ever read. And it dealt completely with fairy tales.
Hmm.
And it was like... was the most brilliant thing I'd ever seen.
Oh, that's cool.
So maybe I'll put that on the list and we
can
get to it.
All right. Sounds great. Sounds great.
So
okay,
anyway.
So yeah. So then there's another thread. And again, I don't know how far down this road we can go without just entering total spoiler territory. But Death himself has his own thread.
Yeah.
And go.
Death and his assistant, Albert.
Albert.
Who's hilarious.
Who's constantly just trying to explain things to poor Death.
Yeah, Albert's human. So, yeah.
It's
kind of like a little old man in a way.
Right, right.
The practical old villainous servant.
All right. So, let's close the spoiler or the non-spoiler part right here if we can. And go ahead.
Well, let me just, I was going to say the other thread is the wizards in the Unseen University.
Right. I forgot about that. Yep.
And they are really, you see it with the one main character is Ridcully, I guess his name is pronounced, who's the president or the head of the university. And then the others are always the other wizards who are either doing their experiments on a big computer type machine called Hex.
Called Hex, right.
Or, which is amusing because they're running it with ants and things. And this is part of Pratchett's genius was I could not stop laughing at the scene where the one wizard is thinking, I just know if we could get electricity into the machine, it would be so great. But they couldn't figure out a way to do it. And they had generated electricity in every way they could think. They had rubbed cats on balloons. And they're like, the electricity was there. They could see it sparking, but they couldn't get it in the machine. And so a lot of the that is Rid Cully kind of stating what's obvious and then completely ignoring it for his own purposes, because mm-hmm. he's a very bluff kind of fellow, not who you expect to be a wizard. Mm-hmm. And the other wizards reacting with horror at his personality or his the way he wants to do things.
Yeah.
And so what happens is Death realizes something is wrong, and he takes on a major portion of trying to maintain belief.
Mm-hmm.
Susan is trying to figure out what he's up to.
Yeah.
Because she encounters Death in this journey he's taking. The Unseen University comes across it tangentially, and mostly just because they're trying to solve a problem, which is that these little unseen gods suddenly start appearing out of thin air. And again, it's the kind of thing where you always go, I wonder if something is eating one of my socks. You know, one of my favorite small gods.
There's a god of stealing socks.
There's a god of stealing socks when they go down to the laundry room, because you hear this little dingle, dingle, ding. And they're like, who thought of something?
Mm-hmm.
And they go down, and it's like a teeny tiny little elephant or something, but it's got a real flare-shaped snout.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, that's one of my socks. And it's backing into a corner and going as fast as it can. I mean, just really, because you're going, we all have kind of said this kind of thing, like, what's eating my pencils? How did they all get down to this point? And when he's imagined these little tiny household gods, it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so they're trying to solve the puzzle of why these little gods are suddenly appearing out of thin air. And so all these threads are converging into stopping tea time or being forced to help him.
Right.
In his goal. And mostly because Death says if Tea Time is allowed to do what he wants, the sun won't rise tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, and it all comes to a head on Hog's Watch Eve, which is most of the story is told on that day.
Mm-hmm.
But so that way Pratchett pulls in all the legends and songs and everything you've ever thought of doing with Christmas.
Right.
And they all have a jolly adventure, and it's all at the same time, it's hilarious. And then you're also on the edge of your seat going, what is going to happen? I think.
Yeah. I certainly was. Yeah.
It's a rare talent, I think.
It is. It really is. It was.
And at the same time, he's making a huge statement about belief and fooling ourselves into believing things that we know aren't true because it would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really under the surface.
Right.
And that's that's the ultimate statement with which you can really agree or disagree mm-hmm. with him, I think.
Yeah.
Does that?
Yeah.
I don't know if that really sums up.
No,
but
it really does sum
up. It's going to have to do.
Yep. You bet. Yeah, I highly recommend this book.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you don't want to continue on in the podcast, go read it. It's fun.
Well, and I'm glad you didn't find it too chaotic at the beginning. As I say, I hadn't realized until you said it that you hadn't read one of his books before, and so many familiar characters were thrown into there against each other. I was really afraid it was going to be hard.
Yeah,
to follow.
I didn't have any problem at all following it. Okay. And that was interesting on that chart that I mentioned. Hogfather is not one of the entry books, you know, and they list several books that are entry into this series, mm-hmm. but I didn't have any problem at all following
okay.
it. You know,
okay.
I think he provided enough information, you know, like, you know, Susan, you know, there was mm-hmm. a paragraph or two about her past, and I think he provides what you need.
Mm-hmm.
I was never lost.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Well then. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You bet.
All right.
Okay. Well, we're on into spoiler territory now.
Yes, we are.
Which is awesome.
Yes. Which is most of it.
Yeah. So, specifically what Death is doing is Hogfather has disappeared. So right. Death takes it upon himself to take the role of Hogfather. And the reason is because the reason that all these gods are showing up is because there is a vacuum of belief. The reason that the Hogfather got diminished is because people stopped believing in him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this vacuum of belief was being filled by all these household gods. So, you know, Pratchett is saying, you know, in this Discworld, there is a lump of belief, I guess, and
mm-hmm.
and it needs to be whole. That's what the universe wants, is for it to be whole.
Yeah, and that kind of what I found interesting is that despite the fact that he's fairly scornful of, you know, he'd be pretty scornful of people like us, because I think he would consider you and me to be people who are believing something that we know isn't true,
mm-hmm.
like believing in God.
Right.
He at the same time is saying people have to believe in something.
Yeah.
So they make this up. And so that's why there's this lump sum of belief, because people must believe. So they'll put their belief in other things.
Yeah. And as I was reading it along, you know, and I was starting to understand what he was saying about belief and stuff, I felt the same way as you. And then he throws a thing out there that made me think, okay, he's making fun of himself too, or pointing out kind of an inconsistency in himself.
Mm-hmm.
Death, I just highlighted it here. I've got a quote. It just says, someone's asking him about the auditors. And he mm-hmm. says, not the auditors of money, auditors of reality.
Yeah.
They think of life as a stain on the universe, a pestilence, messy, getting in the way. But the way he described him, the auditors, you know, he mm-hmm. says, you know, powerful enemies, they've gone too far this time. Now they are using people. And then someone says, well, who are they? And he says, those who think the universe should be a lot of rocks moving in curves.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's how he described the auditors. And this is Death doing the describing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Even though he was saying this stuff about belief, and even though it may be clear that, you know, our belief is part of the beliefs that he's talking about, because Death does say something later about how believing in the small stuff prepares you for believing in the big stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he did seem to be implying that the big stuff is false and the small stuff is false. But at the same time, he doesn't seem to be for a meaningless universe.
Well, he says, they have no name. Call them the auditors. They run the universe. They see to it that gravity works and the atoms spin, or whatever it is atoms do, and they hate life. Why? It is irregular. It was never supposed to happen. They like stones moving in curves, and they hate humans most of all, Death sighed. In many ways, they lack a sense of humor. And he says, why the hog, Susan says, why the hog father? And Death says, it is the things you believe which make you human. Good things and bad things, it's all the same. And so what's funny is, it's in a sense, he's actually there condemning the sort of thinking that leads to those very angry atheists that we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
And that in many ways, they lack a sense of humor. And at the same time, he's condemning that overall way of thinking, which is his, I assume, by saying it doesn't matter what you believe in, good or bad, it's what makes you human, by saying humans have to believe this stuff. And I think that's kind of interesting because, sorry, I'm going to go off on a small tangent.
No,
now that I'm thinking about it, that's what I would then ask is, if we're going to be super logical, like either side of this, why do we have that belief and that need for belief if it wasn't built in for some other reason?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'd say about that.
There's no reason.
Yeah, and he'd say that there's no reason, or we'd come up with some convoluted evolutionary reason why it was good.
Right.
You know, yeah, this helped us survive because of blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's something that I hear a lot right now.
Right, and you're just like, no, what about, that's like saying, well, they keep breathing because they insist they need oxygen. They're so stupid,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm just like, no, it's a part of our nature, which I... You know, and we're the only animals like that. So,
there's a genetic reason for almost every single thing is kind of the time that we're in right now.
Yeah, that's the rocks should move in curves, and everything else is so messy.
Yeah, and he, one other thing that I noted was Susan at one point said there was far more to genetics than squirmy spirals.
Yeah,
that made me laugh. Yeah. That line.
Well, especially
and
since
she was saying that because she could do something, you know, and she was Death's granddaughter, you know, so she had some powers. But I mean, this statement made me laugh because, you know, again, it's a really sharp satire and a little bit on himself too. It's not like I didn't find this book attacking in any way.
No.
I found it very thought provoking about belief. And I, like you said, I appreciated that he was, poking both sides.
Well, and even Boy, it's really helping to talk about this. I appreciate it. Because these are all kind of things I'd noted, but I hadn't really considered until this point of looking at all these things that it's almost as if he himself doesn't know what to believe. So he's just, in almost a scientific way, he's pointing out all these things and then just kind of laying them out there saying, I don't really have a conclusion. Mm-hmm. In a sense, he's not coming down for one side or the other. He's just saying you can't forget this side when you're looking at that side.
Yeah.
And because he makes plenty of fun of people who have belief that they know isn't real. Like when Albert does this whole question thing with death, where death is saying, well, I have to preserve the meaning of Hog's Watch or bad things will happen. And Albert's like, which meaning? The one where if there isn't a sacrifice, then the sun doesn't come up? No. The one where, and he goes down through what people presume are the different genesis of St. Nicholas throughout time, back to the times when you would sacrifice a person, you know, a blood sacrifice to keep the sun coming up. And he finally gets up to modern times and he goes, oh, the one where it's nice to be nice. And the Hogfather goes, well, that's better than nothing. And yes, that's what we're going to do right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to look at that train of thought there.
Right, right. I can't remember who said this, but another note that I took was somebody said, the truth may be out there, but lies are inside your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he is... I appreciated that too, because, you know, whatever the truth is, it's out there.
Right.
And, you know, it does exist. And, yeah, so that it's a, yeah, again, you know, just like you said, he's taking both sides and, poking away.
Because the only thing he misses is that in that whole thing, I was thinking, talking back to the blood sacrifice so that things can go on. And I'm like, well, of course, what the Catholic Church would say is that, yes, that was a foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. So people would understand the true, capital T, blood sacrifice that was needed.
Yeah, yeah. And
Christ.
But, you know, if you look at the history of humanity, too, you know, one of the things a lot of atheists say is, well, you know, how come you don't believe in Zeus, for example? And that's something that I had to think about quite a bit, you know, because I used to be really into Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell used to make a whole lot of sense to me. And, but, you know, one of the things that kind of got me out of this loop of thinking that I kept going into was Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. There's a book called The Inklings by, I think his name is Humphrey.
Okay.
But there was a section in that book, and I don't have it in front of me, or I don't have a, there's no way for me to quote it, but it described C.S. Lewis asking J.R.R. Tolkien, he said, well, what about all these myths? You know, these myths prove that religion is false because look how wrong they were. You know, we think that these people are obviously incorrect. We think these people are obviously incorrect. Yet this stuff that you believe right now, you're saying is correct. And Tolkien had something to say along the order of, these are all reflections of the one reality, which is what we talk about on this podcast.
Right.
So he said, you know, everybody's striving to find out what the truth is. And isn't it amazing how similar they are? That should be what's amazing. You know, yeah, I wish I had the exact quote, and maybe I'll try to look it up.
Well, yeah, and because the thing is that that's kind of what Advent's about, really. And we're in Advent, and I mean, Sunday will be the last Sunday of Advent before Christmas. But I remember reading something that was talking about John the Baptist and trying to help understand how important it was that he was the person who said, here's coming the king, where, you know, you have to level the road out and make the way ready. And John the Baptist always said, there's one coming after me who's greater. And they said, well, of course, for the people of that time, they'd understand that kings would send out forerunners. So because you'd have to get the town ready and the road and all this stuff. And they said, well, look at it this way. We're all very familiar with the idea that if you're coming out with a new kind of car, you do tons of advertising. You tell what all the features are. Why would you want the car? It's the same thing. Throughout history, there were all these little hints and foreshadowings and types given to man that man misunderstood and kind of twisted, went, oh, I understand this part. And they kind of went after the wrong bit of it, like the air conditioning, while the car company's going, no, it's the fact that it's got such a great ride or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, so Christ is the one who fulfills all that stuff and brought it all together. And all of those things are reflections of him in some way, if you look at them.
Yeah.
And so atheists would say, no, it's something inside man that just goes, oh, this is the only thing that makes sense. Whereas Christians look at it the other way and go, he is the lens through which all things come into focus.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a great way to put that.
I
recall the time when I found out that the Epic of Gilgamesh had a flood story in it. Everybody made such a big deal out of that. And I remember the first time that I heard that, it was from a person who was saying, look, doesn't this prove that, you know, religion is, you know, ridiculous? And I thought, wow, yeah, maybe it does, you know. And then, you think about it a while and you go, well, no, it doesn't. Because, I mean, it's almost historical evidence that, you know, something really happened, you know.
Right.
And you're like, oh, my goodness, you know. So and then, you know, got excited again. And you kind of realize that, wow, this was their interpretation of what happened. And something happened.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that I, because, you know, we did the Epic of Gilgamesh in extremely modernized and folktale-ish form when Rose told it on Forgotten Classics.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right.
Because of Genesis, which was my first encounter with it, really.
Yep.
And I was actually, because I am in the mindset I am, before I would have had the same reaction you did, but I just looked at it and went, oh my gosh, they took this. And also some elements of the myths around them that everybody knew, that's what everybody knows, to explain things. But they looked at it and went, but wait, based on what we know of God through this focus, here's what it really reveals about God. And so what I loved is that they said, well, no, here's this thing. You guys just weren't looking at it from the right point of view. Based on all our evidence, look what this tells us about God. And how he comes into relationship with man and all that. And I was just then, that was a real polarizing moment for me because I've always had that same kind of struggle. And I'll still go back to it. I was, you know, I'm a rational person raised in the very secular Western world. But I just was like, look what they did. They took it and used it to show us how beautiful things could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not, of course, the drowning of everything, but taking that event, which you can't deny, and saying, but look what happened with Noah, the covenant, how much God loves him. He never gives up, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, and that's, I can really see, because for C.S. Lewis, that was the polarizing night of his life. He came out, he went into that night an atheist. And I love that his friends and him sat up and just talked and talked and talked and didn't give up and got into it. And then, and not because they were pounding him over the head, but because he was bringing up stuff where they were like, no, 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 here's the reason.
Yeah.
And he came out of it like, I can't deny it. And then he did that with a book that we could read sometime, which is on my list, Till They Have Faces.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to read that. Which is his retelling of, why can't I remember it now? Psyche and Cupid.
Oh, cool.
In an astounding fashion that any science fiction fan listening would find amazing.
Oh, neat.
It's truly amazing, but and hard to read. So, but
oh, perfect.
He really embraced it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, but it's that whole concept, which I guess that's the reason I was interested in reading this book. Although, you know, I know I've said it before and we've said it before, but thank you so much for this podcast because talking about it really clarifies things.
Oh, yeah.
But it was because of the way Pratchett took all these myths that we have, translated them into his own world that he's created so that we could kind of laugh in appreciation of what it is that we do and yet shine that light on it so that you stop and look at all of them in a different way.
Yeah, I think that's the power of science fiction and fantasy.
Right.
You know, when you know, so often in Star Trek, you know, it's pretty obvious, but so often in Star Trek, when you see an alien that's got some specific trait, what they're talking about humans. You know, they're making a point about humanity. And in science fiction and fantasy, is those are the genres in which you can step away from humanity in order to examine it. It's very difficult to do that in any other genre.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
I think you can also do it in mystery where you have a real definite wrong that was done and people are trying to uncover what happened. And when you have, of course, I'm thinking of things like And Then There Were None or even more classic mysteries. But what happens is when you start looking into everyone's motives and how they felt about whoever was killed or whatever crime was done, all of a sudden you start uncovering the good and the bad in relationship.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, well, almost every genre of fiction, you know, including mystery, we're all examining humanity, you know, so I don't mean that they have nothing to say, but I'm saying in science fiction and fantasy is where you can look at humanity as a whole.
That's what I'm trying to say is you can
pull back, and by creating others, you can look back at humanity as a whole and what we do as an entire group. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, because it really comes down to the thing of the great character he uses to show this is death, because death is super literal.
Yeah.
And so that when he's coming down the chimney and leaving the sooty footprints for the kids to see, and, you know, Albert's delightedly drinking the sherry and eating whatever it is they leave out, and the Hogfather's going, well, wait a minute. He's reading the little notes the kids have left, and he's like, well, I can clearly tell that they don't really believe. They're acting like they believe because they want the present.
Mm-hmm.
And Albert says, well, that's good enough. And he goes, so they don't believe and they do believe? And he goes, yeah, you can really do it. And that's kind of the whole summary of the whole thing. And the fact that when Death is pulling gifts out of the bag, he pulls out actually what the kids are asking for. When he lets the bag do it, it's some translation into the sort of things that we understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like the wooden sword instead of the real sword.
Right, right.
and you know,
I made sure some of them saw me. I know if they are peeping, Death said proudly. That's kind of how Death, you know, of course I don't do it justice, but that's a little bit of how, almost how Nigel Planer did it the whole time. And every time I heard his voice, it was just funny. Ho, ho, ho.
I know. Well, and I think part of the epitome, and this is kind of stepping away from the thematic discussion, but I absolutely never will get tired of the scene in the mall, basically, in the store where the owner has paid for a Hog's Watch father to come and, listen to the kids, what they want, you know, the way everybody does when you take your kids to see Santa. But it's the Hog father who shows up with the pigs, the giant boars.
Yeah, and he basically lands on the model.
They land right there, and everyone's like, they really see Death, but their brains won't let them. So they see the Hog father because they know that's who should be there. And then the pigs wet all over the floor. And throughout the rest of the book, anytime he encounters a child, it's like, yes, that was very naughty of the pig, wasn't it? As they're whispering in his ear, because the parents are, ooh, and the kids are like, ooh, leaning forward, delightedly going, that pig pissed all over the floor. You know, like, that was a very bad pig, wasn't it, says Death. But the thing of when the kid says it wants an army and a sword, and the Hogfather says, what do you say? A big sword, said the child after a pause for deep cogitation. That's right. And so they go on and he says, you're supposed to say thank you. Thank you. And be good. This is part of the arrangement. Yes. Then we have a contract. And he reaches in. So it's like, you're like, you're right. But oh my gosh. And the force of the belief is such that when the guards are there trying to arrest him because he's not the Hog father that was contracted for, one of them gets close to him and he winds up sitting on his knee asking for what he wants. newest whatever crossbow.
One of the scenes that I loved, and this is a scene that was on YouTube that I watched, and they did it very, very well, was Death asking Hex. He was trying to say, you know, what could I do? You know, he said, you know, if people stop believing in the Hog Father, will the sun come up? You know, and then the thing chugs away and then writes, no, you know, the sun won't come up. And but anyway, he convinces Hex to believe in the Hog Father because belief is what's going to fix the problem. You know, he asks, right. you know, what's going to fix the problem? And the computer says, you know, and the computer is this quill writing on this piece of paper.
And powered
they
by
did
ants.
It, they did it very, very well. I urge you to take a look at it
okay,
on YouTube.
I will.
And they scribble, 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 and it writes, you know, consistent belief or something like that will solve this problem. Yeah. And then he says, do you believe in the Hogfather? And it writes, yes. And he says, do you believe? And it writes, yes. And he says, do you believe? And he says, yes. Really great on the audiobook. And then the Hogfather says, great, yeah. good. And then he starts to walk away, and then he hears scribble, 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 scribble. And he walks over there, and it says, dear Hogfather, for Hog's Watch, I want.
And he's like, you're not allowed to ask. And he stops and yeah. says, I am entitled. He says, oh, wait, you can. He goes, yes, I am entitled. Mm-hmm. But you're a machine. All things strive.
All things strive, right.
Have a point. Okay. And he reads the list. He's like, I don't know what most of these things are. I don't think the sack will either. Uh-huh. And the machine think, I regret this. Well, we'll do the best we can. All right. How old are you? And he's rummaging around in the sack. And then later on, there's the teddy bear that they can't take off of the machine.
That's right.
Or it starts crying and throws a tantrum.
Fantastic. Yeah, I don't want to tell the arch-chancellor that this stops working when you take the teddy bear away.
That's it, arch-chancellor Ridgely. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so funny. Yeah.
He's that big bluff kind of character who's always embarrassing everyone, but yes. somehow manages to solve things anyway.
Right, right. Or spur other people to solve it.
Right. Yeah. Yes, because just to get him to shut up and leave them alone because it's driving them insane.
Yeah, yeah. And we haven't talked much about Tiatame, Tea Time.
No,
who is? Yeah, I mean, he's such a bizarre character. You know, he's got only one working eye. He's got a glass eye, and his other eye is just a little tiny pupil. So mm-hmm. he looks very odd. And again, those scenes, you know, he just offs people when he's done with them because, you know, he's gathered this team together to do what mm-hmm. he wants to do. And they've all got these skills, and he uses their skills and then eliminates them.
Right. And, they don't matter. They're just well, and that's kind of interesting because there's a huge, now that I think about it, humanist theme that comes out here.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got Tiatame, who's clearly a villain, and that's really illustrated by the end of the book, who just does use people as disposable tools.
Right.
And then you've got the Hogfather, who in his logical way is like, what do you mean this little match girl is asking for death? No, that is not happening. Not tonight. And mm-hmm. Albert is saying, well, no, you have to have them. They're the ones that make everybody else see how great their lives is. And he's like, oh, no, I don't think so. You know, and so he goes around treating everybody as if what they want matters.
Mm-hmm.
And saying to the king who's going to force all this great stuff on the old man in the cottage who just really wants like hog jowls and beans or something, that charity is not giving people what you want to give them. It's giving them what they want.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's contrasted, you know, that very strong theme of here's how it should be.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And through the character of Tea Time, yeah, death is trying to increase belief so that humans can be human.
Right.
And Tea Time at the same time is treating humans as just means.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, fascinating. I hadn't thought of that contrast, but yeah, it's definitely there.
Well, I hadn't until we were just talking, but that's... Yeah. That's really what you see, and that's why you care. And Susan doesn't even think of it that way. She just knows he's a monster who has to be stopped.
Right.
And that's why it was so effective when they were in the Tooth Fairy's castle,
mm-hmm.
which is where Tea Time's thing was to use all the little teeth for sympathetic magic so he could channel the children's belief to not believe in the Hogfather, which I thought was a brilliant tie back to old beliefs in magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And symbols and everything like that. And what kills everybody is their belief.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have any belief of his own. Tea Time doesn't. And he's destroying belief, but he's using it to achieve all his ends.
Right, right.
And it's, you know.
Yeah, and at the end, even, you know, we're in spoiler territory, so I can say
right,
the end,
huge,
hopefully.
Yeah, that's so, what yeah, kills him.
Yeah, and that's what kills. And even Susan's belief that death is not a monster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, He's mm-hmm. like, yeah, you knew that was going to hurt me. You know, I don't know if I should say specifically what happened there, but the,
well, why not? They're
okay. Yeah. So, the way that, tea time is eventually eliminated is Susan throws the spear through Death.
The poker.
Yeah. The poker.
It's
I'm
the
sorry.
Poker that kills not monsters.
That's right. It's a poker that kills right. monsters. And, yeah, so it goes through Death into Tea Time.
Right.
And Death, you know, after that all happened, he's like, you know, were you sure that wasn't going to hurt me? And she's like, yeah, I knew.
Yeah.
You know, because she knew what it killed and she knew that her father was not a monster.
Yeah.
And it exactly. was a belief. Yeah. That was a belief.
And it was
too.
And it was actually the children's belief that it was all based on.
Mm-hmm.
Because the children were the ones who had the firm belief they'd seen her kill monsters with the poker. They knew the poker was stronger than the monsters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they, you know, they knew who was the monster in the room.
Right, right. Yeah. Wow. It's cool how that all ties together.
I know. He did yeah. a brilliant job for as complicated as the book is. And yeah. And if, you know, if you don't care about these themes, it doesn't really matter. The themes are there adding depth to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just read them, read the story. Obviously, I have many a time without thinking about it this deeply, as you can tell from me going, oh my gosh, I just figured this out. But that's what makes a story worth reading and rereading.
Yeah.
He does everything so well. Like,
and he's clever all the time.
He's clever.
Yeah.
He's so clever.
Mm-hmm.
Like the place where the Tooth Fairy's castle is. Because children are the ones who believe in the Tooth Fairy exclusively, it's drawn like a children's idea of a drawing. The sky is blue overhead, and then there's just white, and then there's the green grass on the ground, and the river is a blue wiggly thing. I mean, it's just like a kid would draw it.
Yeah, that's neat.
I mean, he didn't miss a trick.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a clever fellow.
He's a clever fellow.
Yes.
Yeah, another scene that I remember really clearly is Albert trying to explain to Death why rich kids get
better things,
better stuff than the poor kids. And it's like this right. huge flaw in the whole belief system. And he's saying, yeah, but it's all part of it. You got to, that was, and Death trying to figure that out because, you know, Death is, he's explaining an impossible thing to explain because it's impossible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it basically proves that the whole system's going to fall apart. But you got to hold that together.
Well, yeah, because he's saying, well, the Hogfather shouldn't care. He should give everybody exactly what they want. And he's like, no, part of it is that the rich kids get the really posh stuff and the poor kids get, you know, a little stick carved by their father.
Yeah.
You know, into a horse, which
right,
was his
right.
own experience.
It's making a social point there and a point about belief and a point about hope. Yeah.
Despite
exactly.
what you know happens,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And even the fact that the Hogfather at the end gets Albert exactly what he wanted as a little kid that he didn't get. That says something about love.
Yeah.
Because the whole book is everybody doing what they do because they care.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah, and you know, Death is, you know, he believe, you know, it's just, it's hard for me to express because the, you know, I understand what Pratchett is saying, you know, and like you said, maybe he is kind of agnostic and not really atheist.
Mm-hmm.
But
doesn't know quite what to think.
He seems to know that it's important, that meaning's important. And
yes.
You know, he says belief's important and things, but it's almost like, you know, hey, that's the way we're wired type of a thing. And
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the whole point about the sun, yeah, the sun won't rise. And then somebody finally asks, you know, well, what's going to happen instead? You know, if the sun doesn't rise, what happens then? And he says, well, this big ball of gas is going to rise. So what
right.
he's saying is you've stripped all of the meaning out of it, and now you've just got this big ball of gas.
Right.
And when it had meaning, wasn't it so much better?
Well,
it so much more human, I guess, is what he's
saying.
Well,
that's because I marked that passage. He just said, you know, she says, well, the sun wouldn't have risen. Really? Then what would have happened, pray? A mere ball of flaming gas would have illuminated the world. They walked in silence for a moment. Ah, said Susan dully, trickery with words. I would have thought you'd have been more literal-minded than that. I am nothing if not literal-minded. Trickery with words is where humans live. All right, said Susan, I'm not stupid. You're saying humans need fantasies to make life bearable. Really? As if it were some kind of pink pill? No. Humans need fantasy to be human, to be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape. Tooth fairies? Hogfathers? Little? Yes, as practice, you have to start out learning to believe the little lies. So we can believe the big ones? Yes, justice, mercy, duty, that sort of thing. And Susan says, well, that's not the same at all. And he goes, really? Grind the universe down to powder and show me the molecules of justice and duty and everything. You act as if there's this ideal order, a rightness, by which the universe may be judged. She goes, well, people have got to believe, or what's the point? And he goes, my point exactly. Hmm. And he's kind of laying out the logic of both arguments right there.
Yeah, sure is.
And, you know, she goes, well, but when you go to bed at night, and he goes, right, so tell me the logic of a bed when, you know, so when all these other things are happening. And mm-hmm. you kind of just, I guess, in that sense, you kind of have to pick the side you lay down on. And from the way the book goes, mm-hmm. that's why he's not maybe the angry atheist.
Right, right.
You know, yep. Which is kind of made more poignant by the fact that he has Alzheimer's and early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah, early onset Alzheimer's, right.
Has publicly stated that he would choose to suicide before things got too bad.
Yeah, as I understand it, he wants the right to do that. He's fighting for the right to do that should it get to that point.
Right.
You know, so he's just saying, I understand why people are doing that. He doesn't want to be a burden and things like that. So, I mean, but there's an argument going on become kind of an advocate of that.
Well, and I think the problem is that it's funny because it's kind of the argument of Hogfather is that you think you know what that means. You mm-hmm. think you know what it means to have that disease from the experiential point of view, or you think you understand what quality of life really is. And I guess the Catholic and Christian argument is you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to face the fact that my family, I can't remember if I've said this, probably I have, has a history of Alzheimer's. I mean, my father didn't live long enough to develop it, but he could have. But his mother and her mother both had it. And I've had to face the fact that I'm like, oh, please let me take after my mother's side of the family where your brain's sharp as a tack, but maybe you're in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. I don't get to pick. And so I've kind of had to come to terms with the fact that I've already apologized to the kids and gone, hey, if this happens, just remember it's not me and I can't worry about it because it won't be me. I won't be there. I won't be conscious of any of it. And I'm sorry if I cause you pain.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how life is.
Yeah.
You know, and it hopefully will do some good for my soul in purgatory, which is a whole nother different story.
Right, right.
And a longer discussion. But I guess the idea being that the suffering you experience here helps clean your soul off for
mm-hmm.
being able to come face to face with God and live in that perfection.
Yeah.
Well, again, put. Words yep. that don't mean much. You don't already believe it.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, sure do.
But I will say one thing, and you've mentioned Joseph Campbell before, and I went and looked this up after. He had a deathbed conversion to Catholicism.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's two priests who were with him when he died.
Mm-hmm.
Said that he converted then. And other people go, oh, I just don't believe it. Well, there's no proof for or against, but
I see.
These people didn't go around publicly going, newspaper story. It's just they've told that to people.
I see, yeah.
So I guess you could believe it or not. Again, belief.
Belief, mm-hmm. right.
But I think when you're facing that vast eternity, you really practice what you believe, which is, there's something out there. I'm not going to go to it alone.
Right, right. For certain.
Yep.
Yep. Well, that's great. All right. Well, that's our podcast for this week. And our year, isn't it?
And our season.
And our season. And what a wonderful, I've just had a terrific time, Julie. So
oh, me too.
Thank you so very much.
oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been so great.
Yep, you bet.
In fact, I just, I'm really looking forward to next year.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, and there's a slight change of plan. We're going to start now on the 26th, and that's because Julie is headed west.
Oh, my gosh.
During when we were thinking of starting next year. So we're not going to start back up until January 26th, and that makes everything easier. So,
yeah, which talking is just about fun. An adventure.
Yeah.
We've got to drive our youngest daughter and one of our dogs who she's taking with her and all her stuff out to LA where she's going to seek her fortune in the film business as an editor. And so that's like a 2 to 3 day drive.
So Rose, if you're listening, I'm looking forward to a film that you're involved with being on Good Story. Can't wait.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be the best?
Oh my gosh. That would be great. That would be great. Yes. I'm looking forward to being that person in the fancy dress who doesn't look like they dress that way usually, sitting next to the person winning, standing up to win Best Editor for the Hollywood Oscars, Academy Awards, and them going, oh, look, that must be your family. Yes, that's our deal.
That's great.
That's how she gets to go. Well, yeah, because she, maybe I've said this, she got through school in 3 years because they took all the credits from her high school that were that could be applied to our college.
That's fantastic.
It was a fine art school. And they went, oh my gosh, come in, please. And so she entered as a sophomore. And since my husband said, since she got done in that time, we would take the money we were planning on using to pay for her to live in Chicago going to school.
Mm-hmm.
We will pay for her to live for a year in LA so she could afford to take, you know, the floor sweeping job or whatever someplace and try and work her way into the connections that she needs to.
Well, good. I sure hope it all works out.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's pulling for her,
right?
Yep.
You have the belief and the fear and the practice and the trying.
Right, right.
Well, and then I just wanted to mention also, I'll be putting this up and I'll put a link to it when I do, that we had a long conversation in our household about books one morning, just so happened. We were all sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
We'd gone to mass the day before. So we had a Sunday morning where I didn't even get dressed till 1. It was wonderful. But because of that, what I realized is that there are two different categories. There are books that I would like to reread, but I don't reread anymore because I don't have as much reading time.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm going to make a list of books I want to reread and really strive to accomplish that. No more than 10 or 15 for next year. And then I also realized there are a bunch of classics that I really want to read, but I kind of feel like I've been acting as if magic is going to put that perfect time into my hands. I'm just going to go, oh, it is the time to read The Brothers Karamazov, if that's how you say it.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, no, I have to make a list and then just start working on these books. So
excellent.
Yeah. So I'll put that list up and maybe some of them will wind up on Goodreads. Although I have to say, one of them you would appreciate because they're all what I think people would call classics, like, you know, Middlemarch, Wuthering Heights, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But one of them is what only people like you and me and I guess Luke and Jesse and Tamahome, Last Call by Tim Powers.
All right. Yeah.
Because I guess it's what I would consider challenging reads, actually.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I really am dying to read that book. So,
oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That one's on my list too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a list of 9 books out of 10, and I may not get very far in this list, but it was exciting to look at it.
Oh, that's cool.
And go, I'm really going to start doing this.
Good.
And then I have 4 books. I also realize there's some books of religion that are the same way.
Uh-huh.
Like The Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales.
Oh, okay.
Where I've been wanting to read that for like 2 years. I think I read it a long time ago, but I'm like, no, this year I will read it.
Oh, good. That's neat.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, good. So, well, I better make a list too. I love a good list.
That's fun.
I have lists kind of spread out all over, but they're way too long. You know, and you look at them and you're like, ah, that's a mountain that's going to be tough to climb. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And that's what happened to me is I was like, I have a list of fiction, nonfiction, audio from like LibriVox, that kind of thing. And so that's when I went, no. Narrow it down and really say you're going to really do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I went through my nonfiction and like numbered like 5 books that I was like, these are the books I really care about reading.
Oh, that's a good idea. I should do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Twain's Feast. I'm like, that is a book made for me. Literature and food. Come on.
Oh, perfect. Really? You bet.
The Sabbath by mm-hmm. Abraham Heschel. Oh. I've seen so many people mention that book. About, you know, why we should obey that commandment of not doing things on the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, all the books they mentioned, this one book is always on that list.
Oh, cool.
I'm like, okay. That's going to be one of my books that I, you know, it's on my four religion book kind of thing. So
right, right. Well, so great. I'm looking forward to watching you go through. I imagine you'll put a bunch of that on Happy Catholic.
I will.
And, you know, as you go through it and stuff.
Right. Oh, and also I started this spot at Patheos.com, which mm-hmm. is just a general, it's a religion site you can go to, and it has, you know, the Buddhist track, the Catholic track, and people have blogs and columns there.
Right, right.
And the anchoress, Elizabeth Scalia, if that's how you say her name, she kept wanting me to move my blog there. And I was like, no, Catholic lives on its own. But I was kind of interested in, nobody really talks about just books there. And so I said, I am willing to drop in everything I do in from Goodreads and reviews from Happy Catholic and just funny things I find. And, you know, when we talk about books on the podcast, I'll put a link. And so it's called Happy Catholic's Bookshelf. She liked that idea. I don't know if anybody's going to read it, but it's easy to.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in just seeing that kind of thing, I guess I need to put that link in the sidebar if they are.
Oh, good.
So. And the Kurt Chester had mentioned, you know, why don't you guys have a list in the sidebar? And we actually have had a list in the sidebar for since the beginning, I think. But, you know, with RSS feeds and iTunes.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people don't click through.
Yeah, so if you want to see the next few books we're reading.
Maybe I should add that to the bottom of every post. You I know, like our next couple or something.
That's a good idea. Like maybe the next book and next movie or something.
Yeah, I'll do that.
I was also wondering if you have any interest in, you know, like you must have a list of books to read.
Oh, I do.
Do you like to leave it as a surprise, or should we put we're considering as a page on the blog?
Yeah. Oh, we should do that. Sure.
Scott's list and Julie's list of books and movies and things.
Yeah. That'll actually help me get through it. Cause if I write it down somewhere where people can see it, it'll make me really want to get through that. my biggest problem with books is that I make a list or something, and then I'm just so easily distracted. I go, but over here, but over there, but over here, you know, and that's, you know, I just keep doing that kind of stuff. But, So, maybe if I do kind of make a short list, maybe that'll help me. You know, if I do little chunks, you know, and say, here's a list of five, I'm going to get through this list of five, and then I can make a new list of five.
I think, my approach is going to be different. I'm just going to put everything. Because I hate, if I say a list of five, then I've essentially chosen my books for my things for next year for me.
Right.
And I don't like to tie myself down that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have, as I've told you before, I have a notebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's my blue notebook this right now. And I have in one section all the, you know, the fiction, the nonfiction on different pages. I have movies in the back of it that I want to read. In the middle, I'll have things like the classics for 2012 and that stuff. I have lists of books I'm supposed to review. I have it's basically my book of lists. And so I have my good story list there. And I certainly can put a bunch of those things on there if people would like to peruse them and see what they find interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Well, all right. Add some of that in there then.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Yes.
And everything.
And everything. Right.
And to lists and new starts and
and all that stuff.
And the coming of Christ. And I have to say, this Advent has been really great. For some reason, I am able to, I kind of have that melancholy but hopeful feel of, I just feel the weight of all those years of the Hebrew people waiting for the Messiah. And I can somehow a little bit transfer it to the second coming of Christ. And I'm like, wow, it's been the best Advent ever in terms of that.
Wow. Yeah. Well, good. That's great.
Just to add the Christian thing back in.
Heck yeah.
So,
I'm having one of those Decembers that, you know, like Douglas Adams, you know, he said, I never have got the hang of Thursdays. Sometimes I feel like I just haven't got the hang of Decembers. I've just been so incredibly busy. And this podcast marks the last thing that I have to do. And I say have to, I mean, I want to do this. It's not like it's
on the list.
I mean, we just had a show at the theater and, had a school board convention in November just a whole bunch of stuff. And, so I think from this point on, I'm hoping to feel some of that stuff.
You can immerse yourself. But
in all honesty, it's just, you know, you get mired in the busy and you miss stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, I can see it happening to myself, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you know, it's hard to break out of it. So,
I know. Well, it's the first year I've been able to, and I don't know if it's because, you know, Rose is cooking all our dinners during the week right now,
mm-hmm.
Which has been delicious.
That's neat.
I know. It's been wonderful, actually. We had an African chicken thing last night that was absolutely amazing.
Oh, man. I am coming over.
I know. And the night before that, a Thai lemongrass pork curry.
Oh, wow.
That's holy neat. Moly, because she's now trying out all her cookbooks. And I'm like, you're writing this recipe down, right? You're writing? Holy.
How cool.
But that and the fact that our big project, I know what it is. Usually I'm working on the second of three giant catalogs, and this year they only did one. So it's a drop in income. But at the same time, I've been able to do things like come home and go, I'm going to make a batch of cookies. And then we're going to sit down and watch Buffy for an hour, 45 minutes.
Cool.
Because we started Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, I saw that you did.
Yeah, and so I've been able to kind of just slowly work through, and I guess maybe that's helping.
Uh-huh.
Also, and I'm sorry to keep just chattering, but I got a review copy, and I will just recommend this to anyone. Mike Aquilina is one of my favorite people. And I don't know if you know him as an author. I don't know if you've read any of his books ever.
Yeah, about the Mass of the Early Christians, I think. Yeah.
Well, I have been so lucky to actually, via email and blogging and reviewing, I occasionally will do book layout for him and stuff.
Oh, great.
So I've actually had phone conversations with him. He's a great person. Wow. So wonderful. And I've gotten a review copy of his book called A Year with the Angels. And it's basically a daily devotional, 365 pages of... He does a little introduction, kind of giving you an overview, and then it's a saint or church father or something, some scripture about an attribute of the angels so far.
Oh, wow. I would really like that.
Yeah. And then he'll have a little something to ponder. You know, he may or may not hit it the way you're thinking about it, and then he'll have a little prayer, just a one-line prayer. And it's, I have to give some of the Advent thing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I sit down and read the mass readings for the day, and then I read that. And, you know, I've only done it for 5 or 6 days, but that's kind of helped bring me into focus.
Great. Is that available now?
Oh, yeah. It's been out for a little while.
Okay.
A Year with the Angels. And then because Tom and I have been reading, he had a book from the year before called A Year with the Church Fathers, where he does the same thing, kind of working through how we believe and live our everyday lives using the church fathers. And Tom and I have been reading that aloud to each other during lunchtime since we have our own little business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, aren't good at things like praying together or talking about our faith together. But that has brought up a point where, because it's about everyday life and even just thinking about, like, what did that translation even mean? What was he saying?
Mm.
Not Mike's fault, but, you know, we've talked about our faith more just in terms of life and living during the past few months that we've been doing that. It's really been great. And it takes like 10 minutes maybe for us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend both those books in terms of.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. I'm definitely going to, I'll probably snag both of those. Just one this year and one next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pick which one. And I have to say, page, I think it was day three. I went, I didn't know that about angels.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly, they're here to learn and help us at the same time. They also have more development to go. It never occurred to me.
Wow.
That they're not finished.
Well, every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings.
Clarence.
So I didn't realize that was doctrine.
Well, actually. In the Terry Pratchett fashion, I guess it is.
Yes, you bet.
So anyway, I'm sorry to just go on and on.
No, but it's terrific. Tis the season, that's right.
So all right. You tried to get us out of here, and everyone else is clutching their heads now going, please, Scott, end it. Get us out of here.
I don't think so. Well, all right.
It's been a great year. Yeah. Everybody, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks a lot for listening.
Commenting and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we love hearing from you, so yeah, please do.
Yeah, and I will say, Scott doesn't really care. I like Christmas presents.
Hmm.
If you have liked us, you could give us a review on iTunes.
There you go. That'd be great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I just got an invitation from Stitcher for actually Forgotten Classics is on there.
Uh-huh.
Stitcher Smart Radio.
Oh, really?
Which I've heard like NPR and things mention. Uh-huh. I think they're trying to increase their content, so I think I'll apply and see if I can get good story on there also.
Oh, that would be great. Very cool.
It's mobile app for Android things. And
oh, cool.
I think they're putting it in four dashboards and stuff coming up. I don't know.
How neat.
Yeah. So if you use that, maybe I can get us in there. I don't think it's hard. I think you just sign up and they go,
oh,
okay.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So
Great.
Okay, so yeah. Happy New Year.
Yep. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy Hogswatch night, is that it?
Yeah, Hogswatch night, all one word.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tusker and everybody bring the Hogfather to your house.
Right. All right, and we will see you in a month or so, folks.
Yeah, where we're going to talk about Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Mm-hmm. Or the entire series.
Yeah. But that we'll read that one because that's the culmination of everything.
Right, I'll reread that, and that's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great. You think I went on and on in this one. Watch out.
That's right. We'll block out an entire morning for that one.
Oh. No. All right.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, all right. That's it. So we'll see you later, everybody.
Yes, we will. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.